Well, good morning, everyone.
Morning.
I'm going to call this meeting to order. This is the October 5th, 2022 meeting of the Chelan County Hearing Examiner. My name is Andy Kotkamp, and I've been appointed by the Chelan County Board of Commissioners. My job is to render decisions on various applications that are authorized to come before me, which include appeals of administrative decisions, conditional use permits, and shoreline variances. That's what we have on the agenda for today. Now, I consider any testimony and evidence presented at today's hearing, as well as all the written materials that are already on file, in order to make my decision. Excuse me, the hearing process does have certain rules, but I will try to conduct the meetings in a relaxed and informal manner, but we still have a procedure we're going to use. For each item, staff will present their report and make whatever recommendations that they wish to make. Next, the applicant or the applicant's representative is given an opportunity to present their testimony and evidence. The applicant does have the burden of proof to show compliance with all the applicable rules and regulations. Now, for the first two items, the administrative appeals, it is just the applicant and the county that will be presenting evidence because they are appeals between those two parties, and it's not a public participation hearing. You're obviously here to view and witness what's going on, but there won't be any public testimony at the first two items on today's agenda. Now, for the rest of the items, after we get through with the applicant's presentation, if there's any member of the public that wishes to testify for those items, they will be given an opportunity to do so. And if there is any testimony in opposition to a particular project, I will give the applicant an opportunity to submit whatever rebuttal testimony that they wish to make. Now, if you are going to testify, after I call on you, I will have you unmute yourself. I'll have you state your name and address, and then I'll swear you in as a witness. I'd ask that you keep your testimony relevant to the application that we're talking about and not to other issues beyond the scope of the proposal. And if you have anything in writing that you want to submit today, you may do so. I have the option following this hearing to keep the record open if I think there's a need for additional written testimony to be submitted. But in any event, my written decision will be made within 10 working days after I close the public record. Now, except for requests for reconsideration or requests to reopen a hearing, my decision on each of these matters will be final and conclusive unless they are appealed. Appeals are by means of what's called a land use petition action. They have to be filed within 21 days of the date of the issuance of my decision. And if there is no timely appeal, or if you don't timely file your appeal would be barred. On the shoreline matter, those appeals are heard by the Shoreline Hearings Board. They have to be filed within 21 days of the date of the issuance of my decision, as that term is defined by the Revised Code of Washington. Again, if you don't timely file the appeal, your appeal would be barred. The bottom line is that if you're considering an appeal of any of my decisions, you really should seek immediate legal advice. I reviewed all the items on today's agenda. I don't have any interest in the property or the proposals to be heard today. I'll be able to fairly and objectively consider each item. And outside of receiving and reviewing the staff report for each item, along with all the materials that have been sent to me, there's site plan drawings, application materials, noticing documents, some SEPA documents. On the administrative appeals, there's materials that have been sent to me by the appellant. Other than receiving and reviewing those items, I've not had any communication regarding any of the items that are on today's agenda. So with those representations, if you do object to me serving as the hearing examiner, for any item on today's agenda, you need to unmute yourself and state so at this time. All right, hearing none, we'll turn to the first item on today's agenda. As I indicated, this is an administrative appeal. This is given application number AA22-340. This is an appeal of a denial, administrative denial of a short-term rental permit regarding property located within Chelan County that is more specifically described in the staff report as well as in the application materials. Now, for the record, I'll admit into the record that staff report, all the appeal materials that have come through, all the noticing documents. There are materials that have been sent by the appellant. There's a declaration of Dallas Meggett. There's a declaration of Evan Garcia, a declaration of Sarah Caraccio, and I'm just taking a stab at that one. A briefing that's been sent by the appellant's attorney as well. I'll admit all those items. Indeed, I will admit the entire planning staff file into the record at this time by this reference. And I'll turn this matter over to Ms. Riles for the staff presentation.
Thank you. Good morning. The property in question is located at 24 Adlerbach Lane in Leavenworth, and the address of the ADU on that property is 20 Adlerbach Lane. The applicant submitted materials to apply for an existing non-conforming short-term rental December 2nd, 2021, and was granted a provisional short-term rental permit pending full review of their application. Schilling County Code 1188-290, Section 4D2, states that an application or issuance of any provisional short-term rental rental permit does not guarantee future issuance of a short-term rental administrative land use permit under Section 4 of that section. This parcel holds two dwellings, as I mentioned earlier, a large main dwelling and an ADU, which has been rented out to long-term tenants. Back in, again, in Section 1188-200, Section 5, in reference to ADUs, states that the property owner, which shall include title holders or contract purchasers, shall occupy either the primary unit or the accessory unit as their primary residence. This property is owned by Adlerbach LLC with Christopher D. Adams as the registered agent. Further, Dallas Meggett and Judith Meggett are then listed as governors. None of the owners, agents, governors of the LLC physically live on the property. The address for the Meggetts is listed on their application as being in Edmonds, Washington, and the LLC is listed as having Adlerbach Lane as their principal resident address. 1188-290, Section 3A2 states that a short-term rental owner may operate only one short-term rental per parcel as designated on the permit application form, which may be either in the primary dwelling or the accessory dwelling, but not both. And the owners have been renting both dwellings, one is a long-term and one is a short-term. Applicants submitted a document to the county titled Exhibit C as proof that they had added their long-term renters to their LLC so that they could be considered on-site as owners. The document submitted was not valid to be recognized as Evan Garcia and Sarah, and I'm gonna try this, Caracciolo, of owning one unit of membership interest in Adlerbach LLC as property owners. As one, there is no auditor file number recording Exhibit C. Exhibit C was not notarized. Neither party were on file to title of the parcel number. Neither party were added to the Adlerbach LLC and the Office Secretary of State and Washington Department of Revenue. The county would also like to note that Exhibit C is noted to be page 7, but there were no other accompanying pages submitted with it. August 9th, 2022, a letter was sent to the applicant notifying them of the denial of the final permit for the existing non-conforming status. On August 18th, 2022, the administrative appeal 22340 was filed with Chelan County Community Development with the associated application fees. At that point, the staff would recommend the denial was upheld based on the applicant not living on site and not being allowed to rent more than one dwelling on a parcel. The owner was also currently already long-term renting one of the dwellings on the parcel, which was contrary to proceeding with the short-term rental process.
All right, thank you very much. Mr. Gatens, is the applicant ready to proceed? Or the appellant? Mr. Gaines, you need to unmute yourself.
That would help. Sorry, my apologies. Good morning, Mr. Examiner.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, I'm well. Thank you. How are you?
Very good. Thank you. Can you identify yourself for the record and who you represent?
Yeah, Clay Gaines on behalf of the appellants, Adlerbach LLC, as well as the owners of that LLC, Dallas and Judith Meggett. I'll be providing no testimony today and no testimony other than the submitted declarations at this time. Mr. Examiner, the issue's somewhat narrow in that, as the county stated in both their denial and their staff report, and then here again at today's hearing, the basis for the denial really comes down to what you'll find on page 2 of my briefings, which is an excerpt of 4 bullet points from the county. And the county contends that the corporate governance documents that were submitted with respect to the LLC entity didn't satisfy the county's requirements, namely that there was no auditor file number, Exhibit C was not notarized, Evan Garcia and Sarah Curuchillo are not on title of the parcel, and Garcia and Curuchillo have not been added to Alderbach LLC. And every single one of those requirements are unsubstantiated and not found in either Cheyenne County Code nor Washington State law, and therefore they are simply an invalid basis for denying the permit application. I can walk you through our briefings on the matter, but we've cited extensively the Washington State law and specifically chapters 25 of RCW 2515 that talk about what's required to be shown on, in this case, limited liability company corporate documents. And in no scenario and under no statute or any case law is there a requirement that you list every single owner or member of the LLC. Rather, you're simply required to show the name of the entity's governors. Nor is there any requirement that any corporate document, whether it's the operating agreement, which as Mr. Examer is probably aware, is not a public document, does not get filed or recorded, nor any governance documents adding or deleting members, they don't get filed, they don't get recorded. So there's simply no requirement that there be any auditor file number. I'm assuming Chelan County is referring to a Chelan County auditor file number, but again, there's simply no requirement for that. Similarly, there's no requirement that an LLC operating agreement or any of the corporate governance adding or deleting members be notarized. It doesn't exist in state law. It doesn't exist in Chelan County code. It doesn't exist under the short-term rental ordinance. It's true that Evan and Sarah are not entitled to the parcel, but as the county recognizes, that parcel is entitled to the LLC, so they wouldn't be. They're members of the LLC, and therefore they're owners of the LLC. And then lastly, it's just simply false, and there's the evidence in the record shows that Evan and Sarah have been added to Alderbach LLC. That's accompanied by Mr. Meggett's declaration. That declaration contains both the admission of those folks as members as well as the full operating agreement, which they've put into the public record today to further their case and the record and add to the record. But it should be noted that honestly, they shouldn't be put to that task in the first place. Those are their private corporate governance documents. They shouldn't be having to put those in the public records, and that's inconsistent with what the state requires. So, If you take this basis of saying the documents you submitted don't demonstrate ownership for these four reasons, they all fail as a matter of clear law. And frankly, the proof of that is the staff report cites to zero authority at the county level or the state level or anywhere stating that you have to have an AFN on your corporate governance documents or that they need to be notarized. That's simply not the case. And that's the entire basis for this denial. And so the next piece of that, and for that reason alone, the denial should be turned reversed in its entirety. The other component that I would address is that if you resolve that to say that the corporate documents that were submitted do demonstrate that the LLC owners are all four of these individuals, you also have substantial evidence in the record from the appellant that two of those owners do live on the property. And that satisfies one of the basis for the denial that no owners live on the property. The other issue is that if they live on the property and they occupy the ADU, which is what they do and what they've submitted sworn testimony for, then you don't have two short-term rentals operating on the same property. You have an owner occupied, in this case, ADU, and then you have a single primary residence. So that resolves that issue in totem. Lastly, I would point to the staff reports and the denial and the testimony from the county today, recognizing that putting aside the ownership of the entity that owns the property, Alderbach LLC, the county has repeatedly recognized that Sarah and Evan are long-term tenants of the ADU. Now, our position is they're not long-term tenants, they're owners of the entity that owns that ADU. But even if you put that aside, they're not short-term rentals. They're long-term occupants of that ADU. And that alone would also cut against the notion that there's two short-term rentals operating on that property, which was again, one of the two bases for the improper denial of the application. So Mr. Examiner, in conclusion, what I would point you to is to look at what the basis for denying recognition of the legal ownership of the property and its owners. And the basis for those being wholly unsubstantiated under state law. But in addition, I would also ask you to look at apparently the uncontested position from the county that there aren't two short-term rentals operating on this property, that there's a long-term rental and then a short-term rental being sought. And nowhere in the short-term rental ordinance does it state that a long-term rental is equivalent to or constitutes a short-term rental for purposes of the provisions that are being relied upon for the denial. So that with that, I'll rest and answer any questions that you have.
I appreciate that. And I appreciate all the materials that you're that you submitted on behalf of your clients. They give me a much clearer picture of, I think a clearer picture, but I do have some clarifications I want to make sure of. So the title, the fee owner of the land is the LLC. Is that correct?
That's correct. And that's in the declaration of Mr. Meggett. And I think that fee ownership was transferred from Meggett to this entity, you know, a few years back, but I think that's in the declaration as well.
And the unit wasn't transferred for the $10 to the two renters until after this short-term rental application. Does that timing sound correct as well?
No, I don't think so. And unfortunately, I don't have that declaration up in front of me. The timing's in the declaration.
Right.
But where I'd go with this is that whether it was or wasn't pre or post the application, I'm anticipating where the Mr. Examiner might be going with this. There is nothing in the short-term rental ordinance that would say a nominal interest in the ownership entity of the property doesn't count, or you need to have this much or that much. So whether it was pre or post application is not material. It could be the case that, for example, the property could be owned as a tenancy in common. And there could be a transfer of a tenancy in common ownership as well. That would constitute an owner of the property. The short-term rental ordinance, and respectfully, that is what you are bound by as the existing code, simply doesn't contemplate or preclude this type of ownership scenario. And if Mr. Examiner is inclined to assume that it does, I think that's an abuse of discretion and subject to a high degree of challenge. If the county wants to preclude these type of nominal interest ownerships, then they need to go through a code amendment process and public comment and all those things. But the reality is they didn't. And so while that's not a basis in the denial of the staff report, I'm just inferring from some of your questioning that either way, pre or post application, it doesn't matter because the reality is that they have substantiated ownership in the LLC by all four of these individuals.
Yeah, well, the code clearly requires that a unit with an ADU that wants to be a short-term rental to be owner-occupied.
Correct.
I have not really focused on the other issues of the county regarding that no documents were notarized and there was no AFN, but I think it kind of plays to what the county's argument is they're not owners. And that's something that I've been looking into is ownership. And as I look through the member agreement, the reason I'm telling you this is I want you to correct me if I'm wrong. That the renters, they have one unit and they're required to live on the property, and if they move, they lose their one unit. Mm-hmm. I think that's correct.
Yeah.
It's a manager managed LLC and they have no rights over the property except for their one unit vote, which the decisions require most of the decisions are either a 60% or 75% approval within the LLC. So there's, quite frankly, I don't think that these people with one unit have any effective control over the LLC. And I'm sure your response is that doesn't make any difference, but as far as their ownership.
That is my response. I mean, my response is that the LLC operating agreement and the membership admission agreement speak for themselves. And I think the appellants would appropriately concede that it's effectively a nominal ownership interest, whatever that means. But that's consistent with my presentation today. But to the extent that Mr. Examiner is saying, well, I don't feel that that's ownership, that's not how the Washington State Secretary of State or Chapter 2515 looks at it. They look at, do you have a unit or do you not? And the rights and responsibilities of that can be modified somewhat by the operating agreement. But then there's other things like liabilities and sort of different things that can't be overridden when you're an owner or a member of an LLC under 2515. And so an owner is an owner is an owner. And I would just caution Mr. Examiner that if you're going to go down the route of saying, well, this constitutes ownership, but that doesn't, we're really in that proverbial law school landscape of a slippery slope. I mean, where are you going to draw that line? And respectfully, it's not your line to draw. If the county wants to create a definition or a percentage or some sort of metric, then they need to do that through the proper code enforcement mechanisms, not ad hoc at the staff level.
Well, I'm gonna look at this more carefully. I did find, you know, some taxation cases that says that the tax is due and owing by the owner, and if it's an LLC, it's not the members that owe the tax; it's the LLC that owes the tax. So when you get into who the owner is, at least in that scenario, it's not the individual members.
Well, respectfully, I would also point you then to the 2515 that talks about winding up dissolution of an LLC, including in bankruptcy, that says that the members are responsible for unliquidated liabilities when in certain scenarios, including bankruptcy proceedings. And so I don't think you can just look at the bankruptcy code itself. I mean, I think you have to look at 2515 and look at what the responsibilities of the owners are for unsatisfied debts or liabilities, and that really does trickle down to the owners in most cases. There are certainly some exceptions, but that's generally how I view that. So I would just recommend that in that analysis that you're also looking at, you know, the state 2515 Act as well.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. Gatens. Anything further? I appreciate you putting up with my questions.
No, I think they're fair questions. Anyways, I have nothing.
All right, thank you very much. Is there anything further from staff?
No, thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Mr. Gatens, what I'm going to do is I'm going to close the record of this hearing, and I'll have a written decision made within the next 10 working days on this. We'll turn to the next item on today's agenda. This is also an administrative appeal, AA22-354. This is an appeal of an administrative determination, again, denying a short-term rental permit relating to property located within Chelan County that is more specifically described in that staff report as well as in the application materials. Let me get over to this. So for the record, I will admit into the record that staff report, the application and the appeal materials. The appeal brief that's been submitted, there is a declaration of Mr. Gatens, a supplemental declaration of Mr. Gatens, and a declaration of Ms. Mouncey. All those items will be admitted into the record at this time by this reference, and the entire planning staff file as well. And I'll turn this matter again over to Ms. Riles for the staff presentation.
Thank you. This is appeal AA22-354. Property in question is located at 8205 Road in Peshafton. Applicant submitted materials to apply for the existing non-conforming short-term rental. December 2nd, 2021 was granted a provisional short-term rental permit pending full review. Chelan County Code 1188-290-42, application for or issuance of any provisional short-term rental permit does not guarantee future issuance of a short-term rental administrative land use permit. Upon full review, it was found that this parcel has an open code enforcement case dated May 10, 2019, which is Exhibit C, that has not been resolved for operating a short-term rental in violation of zoning, and a code violation for an unresolved building permit number BP070878. Per Chelan County Code 1188-290, section 4A2, all uses on the property must fully comply with this title, and the property may not have existing unresolved Chelan County Code permitting land use or other violations under Title 3, 11, 15, or 16 in order to be eligible to apply for an administrative short-term rental land use permit or conditional use permit under this chapter. Existing properties claiming non-conforming short-term rentals may be issued a provisional rental permit and may be provided the time of their respective grace period pursuant to subsection 2EIC of this section, but no later than December 31st to address all violations. No provisional or other short-term rental land use permit shall be issued after that date and until any violations are resolved. Documentation for this application provided within 30 days of notification did not pertain to their case and did not prove that their code enforcement case was resolved. This is Exhibit D. Per Chelan County Code 1122030, R1 zoning in the Pochastin UGA does not allow short-term rentals of any tier. August 18, 2022, a letter was sent to the applicant notifying them of the denial of the final permit for existing non-conforming status. August 30th, 2022, the administrative appeal AA22-354 was filed with Chelan County Community Development with the associated application fees. Staff recommends denial be upheld based on the applicant not meeting criteria by having outstanding code enforcement cases, incomplete building permit, and short terminals not being allowed in the R1 zone.
All right, thank you very much. Mr. Gatens, is the appellant ready to proceed?
We are, Mr. Examiner. Clay Gatens on behalf of the appellant Jane and Steve Muncy. I will not be presenting testimony today and will be relying on the declaration testimony that's been previously submitted into the record.
Thank you.
All right, good morning. This, I think, staff is somewhat recited. To me anyways, the staff report and the denial are a little bit confusing, but I do think the parties agree that the denial is based on really two issues. One is a purported outstanding code enforcement issue that was memorialized in a 2018 code enforcement 18-0128 notice of violation. And as I understand it, that relates to a remodel of a portion of the primary of the residence on this property that had permits for the remodel, but are alleged and that have never been sort of finaled out. And that is the code Title III building code outstanding alleged violation component of it. So that's one leg of the denial. The other leg of the denial, which is also kind of being tied into to this 2018 notice of violation, is an alleged zoning violation relating to the Pochastin UGA. And I think the county's position through the staff report and the denial is that their position is that both of these violations, or these alleged violations, both the code or the building code violation and then the zoning code violation, are all encompassed in this 2018 outstanding code enforcement action. And that because there's this outstanding 2018 code enforcement action, that's the basis for denying the permit application. So in looking at that, I'll take each of those two legs or pillars under that outstanding 2018 code violation in order. And so the first one is the alleged building code violation. The evidence in the record and the declaration testimony don't attack or take issue with the county's position that there was a permit for remodel that looks like it just didn't have some or the final inspection for it. And they have submitted evidence into the record of numerous conversations with staff to just try to figure out what needs to be done to remedy that. Now, my guess is, and my thought is that what needs to happen for that is there needs to be an after the fact inspection so the county can go in and inspect that remodel and sign off on it or not, but otherwise resolve it through some level of an after the fact inspection, given that they recognize a permit was pulled for it, but just not finaled out. And what the record shows that's been submitted by the Muncys, and there isn't any competing evidence in the record from the county, is that the Muncys, since at least I think August of this year, have been trying to work with different members of community development staff to just simply get an answer to, hey, what do we need to do to resolve the building code violation? And the testimony that's in the record is that at one point they were told by staff that the building code violation component of the CE 2018-0128 was no longer an issue. Now, it's unclear from the email that were also submitted as part of Jane Muncy's declaration whether that position by one staff member was supported by a different staff member or not. It appears to me that there's conversations effectively saying, even if the building permit piece is resolved or a non-issue, just assume that you're taking that as truth based on the evidence submitted by Ms. Muncy, we still have this zoning code violation, which I'll get to in a minute. But for purposes of this appeal and our arguments, the first pillar is that we don't dispute that a building code violation was encompassed in that code enforcement action from 2018. But we have submitted evidence that we were informed by the county prior to this permit denial that was no longer an issue. That may be in dispute between the parties, but the only side that has any substantial evidence on that is the Muncy's. And that's been submitted in the declaration and then the accompanying email. But even if that building permit piece is still sort of out there, what I'm struggling with, and one of the issues that I would just sort of generally posit to Mr. Examiner is, you know, I the short-term rental ordinance, although there's a lot of dispute about what it says, does have very clear language that you have until the end of the year to try to resolve effectively resolvable code violations, be that zoning or building code. And so I don't understand why the denial was issued at this time if the parties, or at least the applicant, has been willing and able, and again, this is in the record, to simply try to resolve that. It appears to me that they have very clearly until the end of the year to get that resolved, and they even have the ability to get a six-month extension if they've been working in good faith for it. And they've submitted under sworn declaration testimony that they have no problem trying to resolve that building code portion of this denial. And so I don't see any specific section of the short-term rental ordinance code that really talks to when the denial needs to happen or says, but even though you have to the end of the year, we can deny you before that. And so I'm just struggling with the practical notion of if they're trying and willing to get one portion of this outstanding code enforcement notice of violation resolved, and they've submitted testimony that they haven't gotten clear guidance or told what they need to do, why the denial is happening now? Why aren't they given towards the end of the year as a practical matter? But as a matter of your jurisdiction, I would point to the code provision that says they do have to the end of the year to resolve this building code violation. And I would also point you to the declaration testimony that shows there's substantial evidence that that's what they're trying to do. They haven't told the county they won't do it. They haven't stopped communicating, et cetera. So that's that piece of it, both from a legal argument of we were relying on the county saying this was a non-issue, and you can look at the record on that. But as a practical argument, why shouldn't we have to the end of the year to try to get this resolved? There's been no statement by the county that it's not resolvable, that it couldn't be finaled out or after the fact inspected, et cetera. And again, our sworn testimony is that we're ready, willing, and able to do that if we just get the direction from the county. So that's our position on that first portion of the outstanding notice of violation. Turning to the other component of it, which is a zoning code violation, it's stating that short-term rentals just simply aren't allowed in the Peshastin UGA. This really is puzzling to me because the county's position is that code violation, right, is coming from 2018, right? It's coming out of that 2018 notice of violation is when they're saying, hey, you can't operate a short-term rental in Peshastin. This is in 2018, so well before the short-term rental ordinance. But the problem with that is, and where I think you really need to focus your attention is that the county itself knows that that's not true, that they issued a rescission, which was AI 2019-01, that specifically said that the prior determination, because there was a prior administrative interpretation, determination that the Shasta and UGA didn't allow for short-term rentals. That was rescinded in 2019 specifically as unsupported and unenforceable. That's the county's own language and their own rescission in 2019. And again, the zoning code violation allegations began, at least for purposes of the outstanding enforcement action that they're relying on for the denial, started in 2018. So that's just not a basis for alleging a zoning violation against these folks, because the county itself rescinded that position in 2019. So, and that really resolves the issue. But even if Mr. Examiner didn't think it somehow didn't resolve the issue, then we really turn to the conversations we've been having over the last 4 or 5 months now, which is, what does the short-term rental ordinance itself say about existing short-term rentals prior to the short-term rental ordinance being enacted? And that really gets us to the what we're kind of typically calling the safe harbor provisions and the non-conforming provisions. Those we've briefed extensively in our briefings prior and as well on this. But in short, they from our position provide that if there was a short-term rental in operation, we disagree, I think, fundamentally about what constitutes legal non-conforming and versus non-conforming, that they're grandfathered in effectively and they're subject to the safe harbor provision. Well, there's no dispute that the Muncie short-term rental was operating prior to enactment of the short-term rental ordinance, because in 2018, that's exactly what the code enforcement action was memorializing, right? It was saying, hey, there's a short-term rental operation here. So there's no contest that there was a pre-existing short-term rental operation for purposes of both the safe harbor and the grandfathering clauses of the short-term rental ordinance, which, just for the record, I'll cite as Chelan County Code 1188-292E-2A, as well as 1188-292E-2A. And then lastly, even though this is not a basis under the denial or the staff report, and therefore it's not directly addressed in my briefing, but I will put into the record that even if you chose to ignore the short-term rental ordinance code sections that relate to grandfathering and safe harboring, you would still be stuck with Washington state law that would establish that this was a legal non-conforming use prior to the enactment of the short-term rental code and is subject to Washington state's vested rights doctrines. And in no circumstance does local county code trump, circumvent, or supersede well-established Washington state law on that issue. So for all of those reasons, but again, really getting back to the rescission itself, the appellants assert that the second basis for the denial, coming from that 2018 code enforcement action, that this use was not allowed in the Shasta and UGA, is invalid for all of those reasons, and the denial should be overturned in its entirety.
Thank you very much. There's several issues here to be discussed. I think the most interesting and possibly controlling is the effect of the AI 2019-01, which quite frankly, I wasn't aware of until this matter. So, but it appears, and I'm not prejudging this, but it appears to indicate that any short-term rental in the Peshastin UGA prior to the adoption of 1188-290 would be a legal non-conforming use. And again, assuming no code violations and all that other stuff out there that can attack that. But and whether or not there were any permits that were required, but if the county thought it wasn't legal, then they're not gonna give any permits anyway. But now they're saying, well, and I'm not sure that it's as definitive as what you were saying. It's basically, we're not saying, how I read 2019-01 is that we're rescinding our prior administrative interpretation because we can't rule that just residential use is an STR is residential use, there's not enough evidence to allow something like that, that decision to be made. So the bottom line is, though, still the effect that that the prior administrative interpretation was withdrawn. I don't know what happened to my decision in the Davis matter. If that was, it never came back to me, I guess is what I can say. I don't know if a court overruled it or if it just ended up being ignored by the county. Based upon AI 2019-01, I don't know what happened on that. Do you have any insight into that?
Don't hold me to it because I'm not 100% certain about this, but my recollection in sort of tracing this out and looking at kind of what became of Davis was that there was a Superior Court LUPA action filed. My understanding, and this is not, I'm not testifying to this or saying this is how it went, but that it was settled and dismissed out of court, that it never went to decision. And my understanding based on representations that I've heard from frankly my clients is that ultimately Davis did receive a short-term rental permit. Now we've cited in our letter briefing that Davis did receive a short-term rental permit, and my supplemental declaration was a public records request for the totality of the Davis file from the county, and that came in, and that's what the supplemental declaration has. So that might have additional information of what became of Davis for you to review, and that obviously is in the record. But my understanding is, yeah, I think there was a LUPA. I think it got resolved short of determination on the LUPA, and I think ultimately Davis got a short-term rental permit, which would, you know, conveniently support all of our arguments and contentions.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Gatens. I appreciate another thoughtful matter before me.
All right. Thank you.
Ms. Riles, anything further from the county?
So in the case of Davis, they did get an STR because there was a settlement. It was specific to them. There was a rescission written by the interim director at that time that was specific to that case. It was the interim director at that time, who is our current interim director, was asked about this, and she, her feedback was that it did not pertain to this case.
So county's position is that AI 2019-01 was specific to the Davis matter and not to the Peshawson UGA as a whole?
As a blanket, correct.
All right. I'll certainly have to take a look at that.
A brief rebuttal on that point, just for the record, Mr. Examiner.
Yeah.
Just for the record, I think that there is no substantiation County code or law to suggest that a publicly published administrative rescission would be limited to a single property or scenario. It certainly has precedential value. I'd also argue that it probably, if it was not equally applied in the circumstances, that there'd probably be equal protection arguments stemming from that as well.
Yeah, I think what I will have to go back and look at is the original administrative interpretation and see if that original interpretation was specific to the Davis matter or to the blanket Peshawson UGA. But anyway, there's some work to be done on that, but I appreciate your thoughts on that. Let me make some notes here. All right, then, Mr. Gatens, what I'm going to do is I am going to close the public record portion of the hearing at this time. Again, I'll have my written decision made within the next 10 working days. It's always good to see you. Thank you very
much. Good to see you. Thank you, sir.
Have a good day.
You too.
All right, we'll turn to the next item on today's agenda. This is a conditional use permit application given application number 22-210. This is an application for a short-term mineral extraction site and certain improvements on property located within Chelan County that is more specifically described in the staff report as well as in the application materials. Now, for the record, I will admit into the record that staff report, all those attachments to the staff report, which included, again, all the application materials, the SEPA documents, there have been comments that have come through from agencies, and I'll admit all those items. Indeed, I will admit the entire plan staff file into the record at this time by this reference, and turn this matter over to, not sure who this is, Ms. Strother, Mr. White?
It's gonna be me.
All right.
Thank you. This is an application for a conditional use permit for a short-term mineral extraction. The subject property is zoned rural residential resource 20. The application proposes to develop and operate a less than 2-acre short-term mineral extraction site in coordination with a 3-unit orchard complex site. The minerals extracted would be used to realign Upper Wheeler Road and develop a orchard access roads. Prior to the commencement of the development, the applicant shall meet all of the conditions of our, it shall meet the conditions of approval for the MDNS issued December 30th, 2020, and the habitat management mitigation issued May of 2021. The applicant shall apply for a site permit coverage from the applicant shall apply for a site permit coverage by the sand and gravel permit from the Department of Ecology. Staff has reviewed the application and submitted materials. The information in the application as proposed complies with the revised code of Washington, the Washington Administrative Code, Chelan County Comprehensive Plan, and the Chelan County Codes.
All right, thank you very much, Ms. Strother. Is the applicant present and ready to proceed?
Yeah, you have Ben Allworth here for Wheeler Ridge, correct?
All right, thank you. I'm gonna have you raise your right hand for me. And sir, do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that any testimony you give today will be the truth?
I do.
All right, thank you very much for coming today. Mr. Allworth, are you here as an agent authorized to appear and speak on behalf of the property owner and applicant today?
I am.
All right, thank you. And have you had a chance to review the staff report?
I have.
And does the applicant have any objection to any of the representations within the staff report?
No, thank you, Mr. Examiner and staff. I just wanted to point out, yeah, this is a project that has been thoroughly vetted through the SEPA and HMMP process, as Strother noted. The only question that I had in the staff report was the requirement for an access permit from the Washington State Department of Transportation off of Highway 97A, as I believe the permit that's needed is just an approach permit from the county off the county road. So I guess that was the only question that I had in the staff report.
All right, and all the other proposed conditions of approval are acceptable, except questioning the need as requested by Department of Transportation for the permit they're indicating?
Yes, correct.
All the other conditions are okay.
Yeah, they're all cross-referenced between the MDNS and the SEPA MDNS and the HMMP, correct?
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you very much. Is there anything else you'd like to add about the project?
Nope, that's it.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. Allworth. Did any member of the public come to testify on this matter? There's not a whole bunch of you out there, so I'll just have you unmute yourself and state your name if you'd like to testify on this matter. All right. So hearing none, is there anything further from staff?
No.
All right, thank you. Mr. Allworth, what I'm going to do is I am going to close the public record portion of the hearing. Then at this time, I'll have a written decision made within the next 10 working days.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Now we'll turn to the next item on today's agenda. This is also a conditional use permit. This is given application number CUP22-238, and this is an application for a conditional use to maintain a farm as an agritourism destination and to allow a different or add additional what I would call it, additional sales and services and opportunities on the site. This relates to property located within Schlang County that is more specifically described in the staff report as well as in the application materials. Now, for the record, I will admit into the record not only that staff report, but all of the application materials, all of the noticing documents that have come through, the comments that have come through. There are SEPA documents, site plan drawings, mappings. I'll admit all those items. Indeed, I will admit the entire planning staff file into the record at this time by this reference and turn this matter over to Mr. White for the staff presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Beckham. So CUP 2022-238 is an application for a conditional use permit for AC district conditional uses. The applicants are proposing to maintain their farm as an agritourism destination, which includes hosting an annual pumpkin patch, offering weekly tractor rides, and selling prepackaged foods and other seasonal uses that complement their existing wineries, such as being a component of Haunted Mansion and other local festivals. The project is within the AC zoning district. So a couple of conditions of approval for this one, pursuant to chapter 1530, the applicant is required to obtain a county commercial driveway approach from Public Works. The applicants will also need to provide Public Works with the parking area, type of service material proposed for the parking lot, the number of parking spaces, and the general parking schematic for the proposed use. If there is over 5,000 square feet of impervious surface, then a stormwater will be required. Just to note, all formal off-street parking facilities shall comply with section 11.90.030 of the county code. That food and beverage service, which isn't allowed as an accessory use, is defined as catered food, prepackaged food for activities and uses that are accessories to wineries. Do note that restaurants are not an allowed use in the AC zoning district. The CUP is for the pumpkin patch and tractor rides. If the property is to be used for a wedding venue or other large events, then the applicants would need to amend their CUP to have the places of private and public assembly. Any amplified music on site would need to meet the requirements of chapter 7.35 of the county code and shall be in accordance with chapter 173.60 of the WAC, which maintains the maximum allowed noise levels at the property line. Staff has reviewed the application materials, agency comments for consistency with applicable codes and regulations, and as conditioned, recommends approval of CUP 2022-238.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. White. Is the applicant ready to proceed?
Yep.
All right, sir, can I have you state your name and an address for the record?
Chad Steiner. Address is 2393 Green Avenue in Manson.
All right, Mr. Steiner, I'll have you raise your right hand for me. And do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that any testimony you give today will be the truth?
Yes.
All right, thank you very much. And you are the applicant and property owner, or at least authorized to appear and speak on their behalf, is that correct?
Correct, yep.
And what would you like to tell me about this project?
I think Alex did a good job describing it, but maybe just in my own words, we're first generation farmers in the area. We're super involved in the community, and we've worked to develop something that we feel serves the market in the area, which is, and it's been served by some venues, but we feel like it's underserved, and that's families. So whether it be locals or tourists visiting and wanting to connect with a farm, we feel like that's something that we've done. We were encouraged by a friend who is the inspector there to apply for the permit. So we're really trying to be proactive and making sure we follow the guidelines of the county by doing this. So we've had a pumpkin patch. This is the fourth year. And, you know, Alex had made it clear when we went through it, you know, you can sell your pumpkins, but there's other activities that are not allowed per the code. So, the addition of music, the ability to have food trucks. And this is, Mr. Examiner, nothing that's crazy. This is 5 to 6 weekends in the fall. But of course, we have agritourism activities throughout the year now that our tasting room is open year round. So we really just wanted to make sure we're in compliance and that we can have everybody be in support of what we're doing. I think our neighbors are pretty supportive. We try to be as respectful as possible, but it's grown as far as interest level in it. And then, you know, we've wanted to be able to add activities to keep it interesting for folks to come. And so I think that may sum it up. It's the tractor rides, the music and food trucks, which as we went into the process, we were unaware that some of these things were not allowed. So I think, the other thing, we made a note on the application that music would end by 8. Alex and I had a dialogue just to note, could we just follow the rules or the guidelines there so that we wouldn't have to amend the application in the future. We don't plan to be a wedding venue per what Alex described. We're really just wanting to be able to host people on the farm.
Okay. And looking at the proposed conditions of approval, do you have any objection with any of those?
No, I think we've worked with Public Works quite a bit, you know, just with our existing tasting room. So, you know, working with them on the, I'm not sure what would be required for the commercial approach. We've got a 23-foot driveway all the way to the venue. So we did that and it's paved. You know, we did that when we put it all together because we were told that would give fire access if there were an emergency. My only hope would be there wouldn't be exorbitant cost to modify any of the entrance or the parking area. The parking area that we have approved for the tasting room has been approved. We did do a stormwater application we have multiple parcels that make up the 20 acres. So I think Public Works has been good to work with. So Mr. Examiner, that's probably my only concern. We're a small business, so the costs that come along with some of these requirements and being flexible, they were able to allow us not to pave the eight parking spots with the tasting room and use gravel, but that wasn't clear to begin with. So some of those things, I guess, would be my only concern. Otherwise, I think what's been outlined is pretty good.
Okay. You understand that you can't have a restaurant on site in this particular zone?
Yeah, and we've talked about what that means because we do. It's interesting. In order to slice apples from our farm and serve them to people, we had to get our F2 health permit. The F2 health permit is equivalent to a restaurant. Alex and I talked through that, so I think we're clear on what that means. Our only thing, Mr. Examiner, and I don't know that needs to be handled here, is there are other venues in our area that are zoned AC that have restaurants by the definitions as I understand them. So I'm not saying we're going to challenge anything other than just being able to have a uniform standard that everybody's held to.
Yeah, well, if you want to let code enforcement know who those entities are in a formal report, then I'm sure that code enforcement will look into those violations or apparent or alleged violations. So I guess what I'm trying to say is just because somebody else is doing it illegally doesn't mean that you get to do it illegally too.
Right. So, that's why we're here. I think the question came up when we talked about making pizza. You know, Alex was able to clarify, like, hey, we can't make all the ingredients from scratch. We could essentially buy some pizzas from another restaurant in town and bake them. Before we do any of that, we'll make sure we're clear with the county code. The last thing we want, Mr. Examiner, is to be in a position where we get shut down. We're trying to build a legacy for our family. So
sure. And you understand the part about public and private assembly, the weddings. No prohibition against the Steiners having a Steiner wedding on site. That's a family activity. But if you're going to charge somebody to use your site, whether it's a, you know, 10 person wedding or 150 person wedding, those require additional permits. So I just want you to be clear on that.
Yeah.
All right. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I don't think so.
All right. Thank you very much for coming in today. So I'll turn to the public. Were there any member of the public that's here that wishes to testify? If so, just unmute yourself and tell me your name and address. All right, not seeing any. Mr. White, anything further?
One thing that Chad and I had talked about the other day was I know that we had in the application, they were proposing to have the music end by 8 o'clock, but as a one thing we were looking at is maybe allowing the music to be later in the evening to kind of correspond with the closing of their tasting room. I don't know, Chad, what was the hours that your tasting room closed at?
The typical hours are 12 to 5. But if we have, you know, events for the wine club, et cetera, we just didn't want to have to come back and modify it, you know, if there's an existing standard that's in place.
All right. Well, the big existing standards are the Chelan County Code regarding noise and the WAX regarding noise leaving the property. But in rural areas, noise tends to travel more easily. Do you have any objection to having a 9 p.m. music turnoff time, Mr. Steiner?
I think that'd be pretty reasonable. Tipsy Canyon's across the lake from us, and I know they're really good at having it shut off. So we're just trying to be in a uniform spot as far as that goes.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for the time. Thanks, Alex.
So what I'm going to do, Mr. Steiner, is I am going to close the public record portion of this hearing at this time. I will have a written decision made within the next 10 working days. Have a good day. Yeah.
Sounds good. Thank you.
The next item on today's agenda is also a conditional use permit given application number CUP 22-319. This is an application to allow an existing residence to serve as a tier two short-term rental. This relates to property located within Chelan County that is more specifically described in the staff report as well as in all of the application materials. And for the record, I will now admit into the record at this time by this reference, not only the staff report, but all of the application materials, all the site plan drawings, all the comments that have come through that have just been agency comments, all of those notice and documents, I'll admit all those items. Indeed, I will admit the entire planning staff file into the record at this time by this reference. And once again, turn this matter over to Mr. White for the staff presentation.
Thank you, Andy. So CUP 2022-319. Is an application for a conditional use permit for the permitting of an existing residence as a two-bedroom, four-person, tier two short-term rental within the commercial agricultural lands or the AC zoning district, pursuant to the district use chart in section 11.04.020 of the county code. For this property, access to the residence would be continued to be off Hidden Hall Lane. Domestic water and sanitation for the residents would continue to be from an existing private well and existing septic system, which are both located on the subject property. And as part of the application materials, the applicants have demonstrated that they do meet all the rental standards applicable to short-term rentals pursuant to section 11.88290, number 3 of the county code. So, for this one, staff has reviewed the application materials, the agency comments for consistency, and as condition recommends approval of CUP 2022-319.
All right. I have reviewed everything several times, Mr. White. I do not have any questions for you. Is the applicant ready to proceed?
Yes. Hello.
Hi. I'll have you state your name and an address for me, please.
Yes, it's Denise Marie Taylor. Address is 8046 Niska Road, Blaine, Washington.
All right, I'll have you raise your right hand for me, please. And do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that any testimony you give today will be the truth?
Yes, I do.
All right, thank you. And Ms. Taylor, you're here as an agent authorized to appear and speak on behalf of the property owner and applicants today. Is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you. I always ask a couple of questions off the top. Have you had a chance to review the staff report?
Yes.
And do you have any objections with any of the representations set forth within the staff report?
No.
And have you had a chance to look at the proposed conditions of approval?
Yes.
And any objection with any of those?
No.
All right. Just because sometimes I forget to ask those questions, I ask them right out at the beginning. Now, what would you like to tell me about this project?
We purchased this property about 2.5 years ago. It was really designed always to be a personal family residence for vacations and also to be supported by short-term rentals. So things have changed. It took us longer to renovate the house as planned. And then the short-term rental process passed last year, and we applied for everything from that. And the person we were working with didn't let us know that we needed this CUP permit. So that's why we're in the process of it today. But really, that's what, ever since the beginning, this was entitled to be a property that would not encumber the city at all whatsoever with any noise problems, trash. You know, it's all going to be on site. There's no new development. It's all based out of the existing residents.
All right. Yep. There's fairly strict regulations, but according to staff, and I'll double check everything, you followed everything, which is refreshing. So is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I believe that's it.
All right. Thank you very much. There are a few members of the public here, possibly. If anybody came to testify on this matter, would you please unmute yourself and I'll take your name and address. All right, I'm not seeing anybody unmuting themselves. Is there anything further from staff?
The last thing that, just to note, is still being discussed a little bit here among staff is whether or not they would need an annual STR permit or if this would cover them. So, I believe our last conversation, we were leaning towards that the CUP would cover them in perpetuity or until the use ceased to exist, but that is yet to be determined and we will follow up correctly on that.
All right, Ms. Taylor, based upon that, I think you would be well advised to send an annual letter to the county asking if there's a need for any additional permit and STR permit, and if you don't hear from them, you'll assume that your conditional use permit covers that requirement.
Yes.
Just so personnel changes, and there might be a new director that has a different idea, so it's important that you reach out to the county as well as the county reaching out to you, but I have seen more and more these matters there, where people turn their short-term rentals over to a management company, and that management company failed to get the permit, and now the property owners cannot get their new permit. So anyway, that's something to make sure that you stay on top.
I will, thank you. And we're also on site in that property a fair amount of time, so we will definitely be on top of it.
Okay. All right, then, Ms. Taylor, what I'm going to do is I am going to close the public record portion of this hearing. I will have a written decision made within the next 10 working days. Thanks for coming.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
We have one last item on today's agenda. This is a shoreline variance application 22-118. This is an application to vary the shoreline buffer setbacks from property that is located within Chelan County that is more specifically described in the staff report, as well as in those application materials. And for the record, I will admit into the record that staff report, all the application materials, all the JARPA applications, there are deeds, there are comments that have been submitted by the public and by agency. There's noticing documents. I'll admit all those items. Indeed, I will admit the entire planning staff file into the record at this time by this reference. I'll once again, turn this matter over to Mr. White for the staff presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Tatkamp. So Shoreline Variance 2022-118 is an application submitted by Lisa Williams and her agents, Gretti and Associates, to vary the shoreline buffer setbacks of the subject property from 100 feet to 47 feet in order to construct a future residence of approximately 1,900 square feet in size. The subject property is located at 7047 Icicle Road, which holds a rural shoreline environment designation for Icicle Hill Creek, which is a shoreline of statewide significance. For this property, the northern portion of the property abuts Icicle Creek and therefore has a 100-foot shoreline buffer encumbering the property, whereas the southern portion of the property consists of an unbuildable talus slope. In addition, there is already an existing septic system that has been installed on the subject property that was built out as part of building permit number BP160435 by the previous landowner. This building permit was issued in 2016 and since has expired. Therefore, the applicant is not able to complete the construction of the residence without the granting of the requested shoreline variance. Per county code, the parcel is zoned RR20 and can be developed with a single family residence. The proposed project is consistent with the designated zoning of the parcel and with the developments of other properties in the immediate vicinity of the site within the Icicle Island Club development. In addition, the applicant has submitted a habitat and management and mitigation plan to ensure that the proposed variance of the shoreline buffer for the subject property would result in no net loss of ecological function value. So staff recommends approval of shoreline variance 2022-118.
All right, thank you. And I do not have any questions of staff on this, although it's a complicated matter. It was well presented, so I don't have any questions. Is the applicant ready to proceed?
I'm here on behalf of Gretti Associates, Erin Drew.
All right, Ms. Drew, you stated your name. Can you give me an address and then I'll swear you in as a witness?
Sure, 151 South Worthen Street, Wenatchee, Washington.
All right, I'll have you raise your right hand for me. And do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that any testimony you get today will be the truth?
I swear.
Thank you very much. And you are here as an agent authorized to appear and speak on behalf of that property owner and applicant today. You've indicated that's correct?
I am.
And have you had a chance to review the staff report?
I have.
And do you have any objection with any of the representations set forth within the staff report?
There is one question. A note was sent to me that there is a potential typo in regard to the request for the cultural resource survey. I think Alex can speak to that.
All right. Other than that, do you have any objection with any of those representations or the conditions of approval?
We do not.
And I'm going to hunt through this. Maybe Mr. White can point me to it quicker. Do you know what she's talking about? Because I see condition of approval number 6 is just an inadvertent discovery plan.
So it might have been, maybe it was fixed.
I'm not sure, like in the
well, I'm going through the body and looking for the Colville Tribe's recommended inadvertent discovery plan. Department of Archaeology did not request a cultural survey and also agreed to an inadvertent discovery plan. So
I found it. So condition of approval number 5, that one should be stricken. It says, pursuant to comments received from DAP and the Yakima Nation, the subject property is located within an area of high probability and archaeological resources, impossible medicinal plants, therefore. So that condition number 5, that one should be stricken from the record. That was I think it was used from a different report. So
yeah, there may have been an earlier position of the agency, but they changed their mind.
We're happy to provide an inadvertent discovery plan. That's not correct. Right.
Yeah. Okay. So please remove condition of approval number 5.
All right, I have made a note of that. Thank you very much. Ms. Drew, is there anything further from the applicant?
No.
All right, thank you very much for coming in.
Yeah,
I don't know if there are people here. It looks like there's 2 people I don't know that may wish to testify, the GLAS County Commission or Roy Ha. If either one of you wish to testify, please unmute yourself at this time. All right, seeing none. Anything further, Mr. White?
Nothing further on this one.
All right, then Ms. Drew, what I'm gonna do is I am gonna close the public record portion of this hearing. I will have a written decision made within the next 10 working days. There are no other items that are on today's agenda. I appreciate everybody coming. This meeting is now adjourned. Everybody have a great week.
All right, thank you, you too.
You're welcome, bye-bye.
Just